Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, 30 for 30 podcast. 30 for 30 is back with season 8. Heavy Metals Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire is a groundbreaking 7-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bella and Marta Caroli, the most successful and controversial coaches in USA gymnastics history. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to 30 for 30 podcast now, as well as the right time, wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Got a guest this week joining us now from Hotlanta, Georgia. Nobody calls it Hotlanta anymore, but I still do. Damn it, it still works. The greatest college football writer that we have ever seen. His name is Spencer Hall. Spencer, what's going on?
Absolutely nothing, especially because we're back to phase one quarantine, y'all.
Yo, I am petrified of Atlanta. As everybody knows, some of you may not know, my parents live in Atlanta. My parents are not young. Atlanta's going to hell in a handbasket. And I saw that they talk about opening the schools there and making masks optional. And my question is, when do we start making things optional for children?
We shouldn't. I will tell you this. Children, they shouldn't have any decisions. I have two of them, so I'm speaking from authority. Don't give them a choice on anything. You know, and they say, you should really give children options. You should say A or B. You should say, do you want peanut butter and jelly or turkey? Give them turkey. Don't do it. You need to be a tyrant with your children, because otherwise, give them an inch and they will take a mile and destroy you.
Yeah, I don't have children. I don't really understand the lives that a lot of you guys live, but it does appear that modern child rearing in a lot of ways doesn't look anything like the child rearing I remember, because I didn't really grow up under an iron fist. I don't think I was operating on the understanding of I can't do that.
You were the youngest child, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Oh, okay. So that's it. Yeah. Because remember, this is how parenting goes. All right. Every first child gets the dictator. All right. And the dictator over time gets tired. Okay. No one has the conditioning for parenting. No one prepares for it. Okay. You need to think of every parent as a deeply unseasoned MMA fighter. That first round, they are coming out and there is not a punch unanswered. There is not a move uncountered. Every single thing is defended. By the time you get to that third round, it's getting a little lazy. You're getting a little winded. You get a little weak. So I'm afraid you got your parents on the downslope of those things.
Yes, that is what my brother and sister say. By the way, a lasting memory of my childhood is my brother and sister looking around, trying to figure out who these parents are that they received. I was also a bit better behaved and more of an achiever than they were, but that's neither here nor there. No, it is always interesting to see that. I also think one of my buddies was telling me about this. He had his second child about a year ago and pregnant with the third. And the point he made was, dude, with that first one, we just had no idea what we were doing. He's like, after, like, with each of these kids, you start figuring a little more out. Like, I kind of feel bad for you oldest children. You get beta version parents.
You do get beta version parents. I think you get what in college football terms would be the first year head coach. The one who says, I've got to go to every meeting and I've got to go talk to those 11 people who show up for this alumni meeting. And I've got to make sure that every single player knows this. By the time you get to like the third or the fifth year, it's like, yeah, an assistant will do that.
Yeah. We've all been there. Remember when Mike Gundy used to call all the plays and not even watch the defense?
Yeah. That's exactly. Now it's like, I don't know. I hire a guy for that. I'm just going to sit here and wear controversial T-shirts and grow a mullet, you know?
By the way, quietly, he got a lot of hell for this, but looking back on it, I've come to respect this more than I could have at the time. Remember when Brady Hoke used to not even wear a headset?
Oh, I was reminded of it by Michigan fans constantly. If you want to do something that really irritates the erudite, detail-oriented Michigan Wolverine fan base, like 50% of them are lawyers, give them a coach who does not wear a headset. Infuriates them. They cannot imagine not wanting to hear every single word of everything going on.
And let me tell you something. At the height of the Mac Brown era, I would see him with a headset on. I don't ever really remember seeing him talk into it. Like he'd have that headset on like people have masks on. Like, why that thing around your neck?
It's bad if you have a coach who doesn't wear a headset, because that's anxiety inducing. It's much worse if you have a coach who puts a headset on and then everybody gets worried. You don't want the manager going into the room and everyone saying, oh, here comes Mr. Makes It Worse.
Yeah, because let me tell you, very good to great coaches who do not need headsets. Dabo Swinney does not need a headset. That's not what he does. No shade.
Nope.
Obviously, maybe the best coach of his era. Not what he does. Ed Ogeron does not need a headset. No point, no purpose, no reason for you to be here. Nah, nah. I'm trying to think, who else is in the, nah, you don't really need it. Mac Brown.
Brown. I'm going to go low-key Kyle Whittingham at Utah.
Yes.
Kyle Whittingham's at the point where he's got a system. Everybody knows what they're doing. He's got his assistants. Everything's going to run the same way. Utah, by the way, one of my favorite college football teams, because guess what they do? Hit people in the face.
Yes.
Do you need to do something crazy or tricky? Do you need to throw like an Anderson Silva like roundhouse kick? No. No, they don't do that. They're going to hit you in the face. Everything is established. Everyone's on the same page.
Kyle Whittingham, probably the most underrated coach with receipts in America. Although I guess he needs to get on the headset now to make sure his defensive coordinator ain't saying nothing untoward.
Probably should keep the defensive coordinator off the headset, if yes. We're going to be honest. He should communicate with signals only.
Yes, by the way, never forget this about Kyle Whittingham. He didn't do it for that long, but he did one of the boldest things in college football history that people don't realize. He had a 25-year-old black dude as his offensive coordinator.
In Utah.
Now, granted, yeah. I don't think, did he at Florida now, or did he just do a stop at Florida? Brian Johnson.
I believe he did a stop at Florida, but don't quote me on that.
Got you. By the way, I also want to say this to the audience right fast before we get into this, because I know what's going on in the larger world. We are currently speaking at 10:20 a.m. Eastern Time. I am telling you that to say, if this supposed bombshell Washington football team story comes out, if it comes out while we're talking, we'll get to it. If it waits till late, I'm sorry. I'm not dodging it. I would love to talk about it, but it hasn't happened yet. Although I am fascinated by the idea that it hasn't happened yet, but somehow everybody knows it's coming and everybody knows it's really bad.
Yeah, don't, by the way, drag this out, WAPO, because the things that people will make up are inevitably much worse than what's going to come down.
Well, hold on. I will tell you what I know while Gabe plays music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
It is what I do think, though, is kind of interesting in the ways that I'm seeing people talk about this, because, and I feel comfortable saying that people are talking about it here just because it's like reputable media members who are doing this. Right. And then, of course, it takes us to everybody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, and they got a little something to say, and nobody knows exactly what it is. And it's all bouncing around in like crazy message board sorts of ways that you do not see with NFL teams. This feels real, real, real collegiate, because for like $99.99 a year, you can get on a premium board and you can get the jump on just about everything. You'll also get the jump on a bunch of stuff that doesn't actually check out, but everything that comes out, you will find out.
You will find out. In college circles, you can do this because nobody is paid to be there. There are a lot of loose cannons who have absolutely no incentive to not talk about you and to not gossip. If you are a booster, if you're a booster with a grievance, if you're somebody on a board, there's nothing other than a sense of loyalty or noblesse oblige keeping you in the boat when it comes to keeping a rumor or a scandal down. In the case of a pro franchise, it's different because you've got people who have paychecks on the line, people who are paid not to talk, people who are paid to be confidential. This is what makes this so different to me. This is a professional sports franchise with a lot of money on the line and a lot of people on the payroll, and everyone's talking. That's how little loyalty Dan Snyder inspires as an owner, that people who are paid, who might have signed NDAs, and people who are definitely on the take are still talking because nobody cares about this man.
Yo, every owner of the team that's not Dan Snyder is trying to jump ship. Fred Smith was like, name got to change, dog. And by the way, if there is something like radical that's going to drop, they have to wait until they get a new owner to change the name.
They have to. There's absolutely no way they could let this man have any influence on the name. None. If the story is half as bad as purported, they can't let him have another second in that door. This is, by the way, again, think about exceptions to exceptions and the environment that we are talking about in the context. How bad do you have to be in the rapacious club of bloodthirsty billionaires who run the NFL, of people who are admittedly about the dollar 24 hours a day. How bad do you have to be for everyone else to go, yeah, this dude is beyond the pale. We have Stan Kroenke or the Pegulas, right? They're going to look and go, yeah, let it slide. Let him go. Just get him out.
And keep in mind, he's like an elder statesman owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm looking right now at all the teams in the league, and I'm trying to count how many people have owned their teams longer than Snyder has. I got the Patriots,
mm-hmm.
the Cowboys, the Giants via inheritance, but, you know, I think Jeff Loria at the for the Eagles. Okay, so he's the new kid in that whole division. Mike Brown, old terrible ass.
Gerald?
Yeah. Gerald's longer running. The Steelers, the Bears. It's basically all these inheritances, like the mm-hmm. Lions. Like, that's who it is. But the people who actually had to buy their teams with their own money,
mm-hmm.
it's only like a couple that have been there longer than Snyder. He commands zero respect. And by the way, he commands zero respect for reasons that are not the same as the rest of us, in large part, command zero respect for him.
Think about this. He has what is considered on the books to be one of the most valuable franchises in terms of like yield per dollar in the NFL. And Jerry Jones will probably let him go. Jerry Jones would sell me for meat if he thought it would get him a dollar. And he's going to let Dan Snyder out of the club happily. That is astonishing, because he's done exactly on the books what you're supposed to do in the NFL. He's maximized the profit. He's managed to get a lot of money without actually putting out a quality product. That's the dream
yes.
for an NFL owner to coast. I mean, remember, like, college athletics, as there's a perverse contradiction here, which is that in the pros, the idea, if you're an owner, is to put out as bad a product with as high a profit margin as possible while still keeping people on the hook. And the Redskins managed to just bypass that whole keeping people on the hook thing and somehow managed to make more money. In college sports, there's really, you have to be good. Like, that's the thing. The only thing that matters, actually, is going to be your output, because you can't be too profitable. If you're too profitable, or if you're too about the dollar, then it's going to become noticeable and people are going to catch on to the scam. You don't want the scam to be too obvious.
Yeah, that's a great point, that nobody gets paid dividends off of college football, right? It is this irrational system where people give up all this money just because they feel like it. They want results.
They want results. And the pay that you're getting, even in what I would call enhanced benefits packages for recruits at certain levels, the pay is so minuscule that you're the level to compete, the bar you have to clear is so low. Same for college basketball. If you consider the rumor is, I think the number at Duke for Zion Williamson was, what, $200,000? In this suit, there's alleging that he was paid $200,000. That's nothing.
I'm like, that's all?
That's all. And that's in a sport where you have very few people on the bench. In football, where you've got, you know, at least a three deep or two deep or three deep, depending on how you count it on scholarship, that price per head goes down in terms of your level to compete. Point being, in college, you actually have to be good in order to keep the pipeline going, or everyone goes. The incentive is actually purely tied to wins and losses, or the perception of how successful you are. And that last part was, by the way, for like schools like Vandy, where somebody's winning six or seven games yes. a year. Oh my God, what a miracle. If David Cutcliffe at Duke is, you know, is clear in the 8-win mark, then
yes.
we're building statues to him.
There will be a statue, by the way.
Of Cut.
They still can't get like 10,000 people to come to that stadium, which is really not their fault. It's what happens when your school doesn't have a local alumni base, right? But they
right.
still can't get any. I'm amazed that they get anybody to go there. Like, absolutely amazed, because I just can't imagine. They're like, yo, why don't you come to the stadium for a game? Why do you want to do that?
Why would you watch Duke football? I don't know. Maybe because it has like anti-aging properties. If you've seen what happened to David Cutcliffe, there was a
yes.
picture. He posted a video about proper mask usage and how you needed to wash your hands and be careful with COVID-19. David Cutcliffe, when he coached at Tennessee, I thought he was going to die.
Yes, he did yeah. too.
Yeah, he did too. You know, he had like an incident with his heart condition. He was coaching Eric Ainge at one
yeah.
point. Yeah, and I remember that Eric Ainge almost killed him. Like, they showed a clip of him in the booth, and he had the ashen look of somebody who did not get enough blood to parts of his body that needed blood.
Yes.
thanks to stress and his heart about to give out. And then he posted a video where, like, I don't know, he's got a new dye job. He's got a beard. He's looking slick.
I was stunned. I could not believe that. And, you know, the thing with Cutcliffe is we all like him. I can't find the person who doesn't like him. Our buddy Steve White likes him. And Steve don't like nobody.
Yeah.
At least nobody with a headset.
Mm-mm. No, and speaking of people who need to wear headsets, you want that man to wear a headset because Peyton Manning swears by him. So if Peyton Manning says the dude knows what he's talking about, he's on.
Yes. Wow. I am still just waiting. Like, when this Washington thing drops, it seems pretty clear to me that it is going to. And I've talked to enough people to know this exists. Like, this is not something people are making up. It exists. We just don't know what it is. And oh boy, what's it like to be Ron Rivera right now?
I think he's good, man. Ron Rivera's good.
Well, he's sort of good, right? Like, he jumped on a ship that everybody's jumping off. But if a new owner comes in, that new owner is not necessarily on board with the Ron Rivera program.
Well, he's also every coach in the NFL. What's your expectation? College, you go, man, I got 2 to 4 years. 2 to 4 years to go ahead and prove what I got or I'm out. And then we enter phase two if I'm successful. And if not, I go get a coordinator gig. Okay, Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera's what, mid-50s?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Ron Rivera's thinking what? Think like you think. You go, I don't know. I probably need another 5-10 years in this profession. Then I could go sit on a boat. So now he entered a situation where he's going to get a new owner. Well, does that new owner want to go ahead and just overturn the apple cart? No, Ron's nice. Ron's players love him. Ron is a good dude. Ron has a reputation for being the good dude. Yes. You have this pile of burning trash. And what's the one thing that's not on fire? Ron Rivera. If I'm the new owner, what's the first thing I grab? Ron Rivera. You know what happens to everything else? I let it sail down the river.
Ron Rivera, like, it is, his name is on every press release. They got me thinking Ron Rivera got a sketch pad and he's working on coming up in new uniforms. Because, by the way, and I think they need to change the name, obviously. Like, you know anything about me, you know this, how I feel. But I also think they need to change it in 2021. There's no need to do this right now. They are talking about doing a massive entire rebrand in basically 3 months, which is a process that typically takes 18 to 24 months. Them Gordon Gartrell jerseys that the dudes are going to be out there with, like whose job was it going to be to try to come up with a new, because clearly Snyder hadn't thought about this. His arrogance had put him in a place that he was not prepared for the inevitability of this day. So what are they supposed to do? Like, I don't know. Did Mississippi say when they go put up a new flag? Because I don't recall ever seeing that. They were just like, we're going to take this one down and we'll work the rest out later. These guys were like, damn, we got a season coming up. We got to have a name. No, you don't. You don't have to have nothing on the helmets. You don't have to have anything because you'll mess this up.
No, they will 100% mess it up. You also don't want it to take too long. We'll get the NFL too involved because then we're going to get something real not creative, right? Yeah. We're going to get something really bland. Remember, expansion era football. We're going to give Seattle, we're going to give Atlanta franchises. What do? We gave them the same name. It was local bird, like local raptor was basically what they said. They were like, well, I don't know. These guys are the Seahawks. These guys are the Falcons. Falcons, actually not a bad name because this place is infested with raptors. You hear hawks and falcons in downtown Atlanta all the time. Like, it's a thing. But still, when you give the NFL choices on these things, they're just literally going to name it like local team. They'll give it as close to the idea of local team. And if you give them two, it'll be local team A and local team B.
Yeah. And every now and then, though, they'll get it right. Like, for example, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Shade of Tampa is a very pirate-like place. That one adds up. They went lazy with, like, the Panthers and the Jaguars. Those were not particularly creative. The Texans, nope, not only not creative, already been done before.
Yeah, we went ahead and just reheated that for you, right? That was it. Are you Carolina Panthers? I don't know. Carolina, by the way, is hard brand-wise because think about all the sports teams in Carolina, like our college sports teams. The names are deranged. They're insane. Yeah. They're niche. They're weird, right? How do you explain anybody if I just give you this random assortment of words, okay? Wolfpack, Tar Heels, Demon Deacons, and Pirates. How on earth? The only one that actually makes like 100% broadly understandable sense in there are the Pirates. It's East Carolina. That's it, right? Because they've got a good solid Blackbeard connection.
You left out the Blue Devils.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the Blue Devils. See, again, Duke. We can't get anybody to go to Duke because it's very hard to remember them football-wise.
Like, I had not realized it until then that basically, like, all the ACC schools are two words or portmanteaus of sorts, right? And then we go over here and we get East Carolina, which is, whoo, It's a lot going on there. I got to be honest with you. My buddy Joe Ovius put a picture on Instagram of his vacation. He showed his brother-in-law and Joe's wife went to Carolina undergrad. She went to Duke Law School. And then I saw his brother-in-law wearing an East Carolina hat. And I was like, oh, so he's the f*** up. And apparently he's not. But I think that was a reasonable presumption.
All you need to know about East Carolina is when you go over that notable alumni list, what's the first name that pops up?
Vince McMahon.
Vincent McMahon.
And number two, whoever runs the Golden Corral empire.
Yep. East Carolina in a nutshell. WWE, Golden Corral.
Yo, I once knew a woman, and she was explaining to me that she had met some dude, and the dude said that he was, like, super rich. And she went to his house, and the house was very, very nice. And she asked, you know, kind of, you know, where'd you get your money from? And she was like, well, his family owns all the Golden Corrals. And I honestly thought he was a con man. Like, when I heard the story, I was like, okay, like, whose house is he in? Like, what Airbnb situation? No, then I realized that the Golden Corral people were ECU. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe this adds up.
Yeah, because I don't know. If you go to ECU, guess what? You can come back to ECU. Anytime. Like, that's me. Who is that? You're like, that's Mr. Golden Corral. By the way, in my brain, like in my grew up in the exurbs brain, when you said that's the guy who owns all the Golden Corrals, my brain immediately said, that's not possible. No one person could control that much power. And if they should, it should be devolved to a series of managers because no one person should have that much majesty in their hand.
By the way, I just had one of those moments right now where, you know those words you hear all the time, but you don't always know what it means? Excerpts is way high on the list. And so I put it in right fast and Google. I was like, oh, gotcha. So like Arlington, Texas is an excerpt.
That's correct.
Got it. Them cities outside of cities that see themselves as their own cities, except they're not really cities because the whole point is that they're close to a city.
I will say this. If your cultural landmarks in your city are something like a Best Buy, a Golden Corral, and the stadium for a franchise moving to a more tax-friendly environment,
yes,
you might be from an exurb.
But I was just about to say, speaking of the exurbs, do you think the Tomahawk Chop is going to survive?
Yeah, it's going to survive. I think it's going to survive because the fans will do it even if the franchise stops playing the song. They'll keep doing it. Now, it'll die out eventually, but you're looking at like 10 to 20 years of embarrassed Braves fans looking at the guy up in the upper deck doing it and going, yeah. Oh man, that dude, please stop.
Did I tell you somebody got in my mentions yesterday, made a great point that if the Braves change their name, they need to change it to the Atlanta Flight. He's like,
for Delta.
Yeah, Delta. He was like, Delta, and it fits so perfectly. Cause we don't get a lot of white flight sports teams anymore. They stopped doing that. They did the thing and moved back into the city. Not the Braves. The Braves, not only did they white flight, they didn't ask if they could come. Nobody decided. They're just like, nah, we've had enough.
If you go up there, and it is the most amusing thing about their new location. If you go up there, their closest neighbor is a large mall.
Yes.
Like a kind of, I don't want to say dying mall, but it's definitely like on the downslope of its lifespan as a mall. And for a long time, they had like a debate with them about parking, and that to me is delightful because what better solution is you can't park at the mall. The mall will tow you if you go and park at the Braves game. That's your whole situation. The argument that people made when they moved up there that also tickled me was this, saying, well, they're moving a lot closer to their season ticket holders, to their base. And I thought, you're so close to it, getting it. You're so close to a point here. Why are they all up there? Why can't the Braves attract new fans? Come on.
Yes. And by the way, the other part of your base is still as far away from this new stadium as they were to this one, right? Like, it's still, oh my God, I was so mad. Because we talked about this the other day when they moved up. Now, I want to say this about Cumberland Mall. It is in some ways dying, one could argue, but even if it is living, it is living a blacker life than it ever did. And I will never forget, as someone who was in Atlanta a lot more during a different era of Atlanta, that is the first, and I talk about this on this podcast fairly often, it's the first black Apple store that I've ever been to.
If you go to North DeKalb, which is another mall that has had a second life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Another mall that has had an entirely new life. Like the barber shop there is a Taj Mahal of barbershopdom because the space is so cheap that you can splash out on all the extras, right? A flat screen over every chair, the aqua massage section of the barbershop where you can put your feet inside the aqua massage chair while you get your hair done. The things that you can watch and enjoy while getting a lineup in the North DeKalb Mall barbershop, like, exceed anything that you could get anywhere else in Atlanta, because it costs nothing to be there. And they've still got the movie theater, right? So, like, still got a barbershop, still got a movie theater, and still got a couple of, like, specialty stores. That's all they need in order to keep that mall alive.
The idea that Cumberland and North DeKalb are now living like Greenbrier and South DeKalb used to is mind-blowing to me. And I know some of you listening to this don't understand what we're talking about, but you know people from Atlanta. Just ask them about what we talk about with these malls. They'll sell it to you. We don't have time to give you all the background. I'm just telling you that Greenbrier used to have a Magic Johnson Theater, and now Cumberland Mall has a Black Apple Store.
Yeah, it is astonishing the way things have flipped in malls. They haven't done the one thing I want to do with malls, which is this indoor go-kart track where you just drive through the mall. That's it. At the emptiest, most desperate malls, take a go-kart track, get those electric go-karts that go like 400 miles an hour, and just let me live out my action movie fantasy of driving through a mall in a car.
That does sound kind of fun.
How much would you pay for it? The elasticity on this is crazy. Would you pay $40 to do that? I don't have a job right now, and I would pay $40 to do that.
Yeah, man, I'm the wrong person to ask about this. The things I'm willing to blow $40 on are way different now than they used to be. I'll give a $40 run. Yeah, I'll do that. Like, I'm a mark, not for infomercials per se, but I'm definitely a mark for Instagram ads.
Yeah.
Hey, why not? Give it a try.
No. You're feeding Instagram, and you're just feeding the beast, right? Because they're just going to feed you more crap. They're like, oh, he bought this stupid thing. We're going to send him 8 other stupid things. And you're like, sure. These will all look great. Do I want a crate full of beef jerky? Yeah, absolutely. It's only $60. I'll do it.
Yes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, guys, we want to do a thing here. You know, it's this day and age. People are like, oh, man, you talk about politics now, which ain't necessarily what it is that we want to do. But the Southeastern Conference has so much sports and politics going on that is actually fun to talk about, and your political views only matter kind of sort of in discussing them. So would you rather start with Tommy Tuberville or the strange political life of Ed Ogeron?
I tell you what, let's start with Ogeron, because Tommy Tuberville is going to have his own momentum, because I'm going to get head up and start talking about all of the things he did as a coach to undermine the case for him ever having a role in political office. So let's start with Ogeron. That's a good warm up. Yes. And then we're going to go, we're going to gain steam and get to Tuberville.
Yes. Now, so Ed Ogeron, head coach at LSU, has been very interesting in terms of Louisiana politics. And speaking of Louisiana politics, Spencer, I don't know if you're listening to this season of Slow Burn.
The David Duke season.
Yeah, the David Duke season. But I haven't listened to it yet. But this week is the Edwin Edwards episode. And you know how I feel about Edwin Edwards. And I can't wait. God, I wish Edwin Edwards was the governor right now. It would be so amazing and interesting. And they'd probably get some things done. But anyway, Ed Ogeron is a very good friend of John Bel Edwards, the governor of Louisiana, and they used Ogeron in the beginning to try to get people wearing masks. Edwards has definitely used his friendship with Ogeron to try to curry favor with voters. Like, there's no separating the governor of Louisiana from the football coach. You cannot take the politics out of this. But recently, Ed Ogeron did some luncheon with Mike Pence. I'm not exactly sure how Ogeron got into this, but he did something with Mike Pence, and Ed Ogeron said, "We need football." Right. He says the world needs football. People are dying, and therefore we got to give them football. So Ed Ogeron really believes in the healing power of football, and we need to get out here and we need to play football. And all I want to know is, what in the world does Mike Pence think of Ed Ogeron?
First of all, I can guarantee you he's from Indiana. The other man's from Louisiana. Actual communication uptake on either side, about 30%. Mike Pence understands about 30% of what's coming out of Ed Ogeron's mouth. And I say this as somebody who I have had people turn on the subtitles on the TV when Ed Ogeron comes on, right? People in the room who I know are smart and I know have been to Louisiana, but who just say, man, I got to give up.
Yeah, he's, put this on. He's the James Brown of college football.
Right, right. Just that low grumble that, like, even if Ed Ogeron didn't have an accent of any sort, it would be hard to understand.
Correct. Him, the right? issue is not the accent.
No, the issue is that he talks at like 20 cycles. He talks like well down on the piano, right? Like his, like it's deep bass and it's grumbly and it's very hard to understand. And it comes at you very loud, which is even more confusing. I want to know how many players under Ed Ogeron didn't understand a thing he said, but were just like, I better do this real hard. I better, because this is so intense.
Yes. I also want to know how many players, depending on where they were in Louisiana in Ed Ogeron's early days when he left the house, they were like, is he? Like, because, you know, like in New Orleans, he could be.
Listen, he can be all things. Listen, he is Ed Ogeron to everybody. He can be all things to all people because at all times he is Ed Ogeron. If you make fun of Ed Ogeron, right? I've said this time and time again, it's very hard to make fun of somebody if they don't have something very sincere and genuine to them, right? And at all times, Ed Ogeron is Ed Ogeron. He has no choice to be, right?
Yes.
He sounds like that. He acts like that. He's that intense and he's that committed to what he does. And he is always on that hustle, right? I don't want like kindly Ed Ogeron to overshadow actual Ed Ogeron because yes, Ed Ogeron is very kind. Yes, Ed Ogeron is currently the co-governor of Louisiana, right? There's John Bel Edwards and there's Ed Ogeron. Yes, Ed Ogeron's coming off a championship. He has been vindicated. He is currently on top of the heap. There's also this. Ed Ogeron is about that grind. No one recruits harder. No one watches more film. He will not hesitate when it comes to pulling out a recruiting trick or gimmick. He yes. will do that. He will do everything up to the letter of the law in terms of what you can or can't do with a recruit. He will do it as hard as everybody else. All right. Ruthless. Remember, after Katrina, right? After Katrina, Tulane had an issue with its players in that they were able to transfer out, right? Given an exemption. Who was first at that doorstep? Ed Ogeron. Ed Ogeron was one of the first coaches to roll up to Tulane and go, hey, I know that, you know, you could stay and help your team rebuild after a natural disaster that nearly destroyed your university. However, would you like to come to Ole Miss? That was one of the first guys to roll up and do that.
Yeah, he was at Ole Miss then. I was thinking he was still at USC, but nah, he was at Ole Miss by then.
Yep. And if you need fresh bodies on the line, if you need to increase your depth, need to put them on the roster, they were right there.
I also think Ogeron figured out very early that getting these kids to go to Ole Miss was going to be a little trickier than he realized. There was no room. There was no time for him to miss on whatever opportunity it was. By the way, to answer the question about is he, the way we knew that Ed Ogeron is not, is A, he got the job at Ole Miss, and B, after that disaster, he was able to get another job.
Another job and another job and to get chances, which is a twofold kind of thing. There's two sides to that. One, that coaches generally get another chance. I know people say, you know, hey, if we cancel a coach or if we fire a coach or if you get a coach embroiled in a scandal and make too much of it, then they'll never get another shot. There's almost no evidence for that. It's like Tim Beckman at Illinois. That may be it in terms of people who didn't get other chances. Two, he got that chance because his reputation for the basics in terms of what he was and his assets he brings to a program really didn't change that much, right? One other point on that, by the way, when it comes to Ole Miss and Ed Ogeron not getting it done there, I want you to think about who did get it done there and what that says about where Hugh Freeze is on the spectrum.
Yes.
Of like reckless and committed behavior when it comes to making a football program competitive in the SEC. Ed Ogeron couldn't get it done. And Ed Ogeron would wake up at like 4:30 to get on the treadmill and watch recruiting film. Right. And that didn't get it done. And Hugh Freeze did. So what the hell was happening there?
Also, Ed Ogeron was, I mean, Hugh Freeze didn't walk in the door and challenge his players to a fight on day one.
I mean,
they can't win.
I, if Hugh Freeze did that, he'd get laughed out of the room. So maybe that'd be a good like team bonding exercise. Right. Because if Ed walks in and challenges every fight player in the room to a fight, that's terrifying.
Yes.
He still squats 315 for reps and then goes on a run. And he's in his 50s, man. My knees weep if I think about doing half that.
By the way, right fast, has anybody gotten Hugh Freeze to say Black Lives Matter?
At Liberty? I think Liberty's official stance regarding player safety and COVID is that no lives matter. So it would be consistent with their policy to not say Black Lives Matter because no lives matter under their return policy, which was so appalling that parents got on. Like, if Liberty parents object to the practices that they use with player safety and quarantine, Yeah, I mean, I knew the players were going to have an issue with this because they're young and the only thing they have to lose is their health, right? But if the parents dove in and said, I don't know, we sent our kids to Liberty, but we've got some reservations. That's something.
This is, there's so much that is going on. But I look at Ogeron saying that, and I guess it doesn't annoy me as much here at Ed Ogeron say that we need football spiel. I guess it's honestly, maybe it's just because I like him and also I just don't expect more of him. Because another person saying this, like Dabo saying this, I don't laugh it off. Mm-hmm. Ed Ogeron saying it, I laugh it off. I don't know if that's fair. It is not just about Dabo. I can give you a long list of other guys that I would feel the same way about. Ed Ogeron says it, I'm like, oh yeah, Cookie Monster wants to play football.
Well, Cookie Monster wants to play football, but I also know the Cookie Monster, that's where he's from. And I know that Cookie Monster has some understanding of the community beyond the immediate terms of football. That's where he's from. That's where his family's from. That's where his family lives and still lives. That's where he's going to live after he retires, right? I don't know if that's necessarily true of Dabo, right? I mean, I imagine he'll probably hang around Clemson, but he wasn't born there. He's not from, and by the way, like, you know, being from Louisiana, I think if you're a native, it means a little bit more in terms of your understanding of unique political circumstances that you face in Louisiana. If he was at a thing with Mike Pence and was hunky-dory and played nice with them, then I think that speaks to the fact that half of Louisianans at least will see Mike Pence and go, oh, that's a friend. That's somebody that I like walking in the room. And I think Ed Ogeron, from a political perspective, understands that as co-governor, right, of the state, that, you know, he's going to try to play nice with him to get the message across that we need to make this happen. Because in Ed's mind, it's all about that. It's all about getting football on the table so we don't have to play a spring season, so we don't have to postpone the season or cancel it entirely. He's going to do whatever he has to do to point LSU, the community, and himself towards football.
Yeah, boy. I ain't gonna lie. You remember Ray Lewis had that thing about the lockout? Talk about how it was gonna increase crime?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, because there's nothing else to do, Sal. I thought that he was being a little ridiculous. You put this in the context of Louisiana, I'm not sure. And I worry about Louisiana more than I worry about Texas. They talk about we ain't gonna have no Texas high school football. That is cause for concern on a number of levels. However, I still feel like in Texas, you can go find something to do. It may be a couple-hour drive, but you can get to it. Even mm-hmm. the things you can find to do in Louisiana are probably bad ideas.
Oh, listen, Louisiana TikTok is going to be lit. If you go on there, there's a hashtag called Louisiana Check, and it has people just doing all kinds of like living raw stuff in Louisiana, like wrestling alligators and taking ATVs and, you know, putting them in swamps. That's just going to be in triplicate. It's going to be just a collection of like misdemeanors and felonies on TikTok if the Louisiana Check hashtag is allowed to proceed without football in the fall.
And the thing about Louisiana weird, though, that people don't get is that there are like four different types of it. Like mm-hmm. there is no one, like people like Bobby Boucher, like, no, that's one kind of this, right? Like there's the Cajun, there's the, I don't even feel like Shreveport and stuff like that is Cajun. I just feel like they just like regular white people, like that's all.
Well, you know that's like your Tulsa metropolitan area, like the Tulsa Shreveport metroplex of sort of quasi Texan Arkansas. That's true grit. That's True Grit territory, technically,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you get a lot of like young Rooster Cogburns up there,
yes,
doing foolishness. Then you get your sort of mid state, right, which is like what I would consider your Louisiana Saturday night crowd, right?
Yes.
This is your LSU crazy white boy crowd. You know, typically that's the stereotype. And then you get your sub-I-10 Cajun. And then you get New Orleans, which you and I have discussed this before. New Orleans on its own is it, like, if you have somebody, if you've met somebody and they're like, I'm a poet. I've recently jumped from a 3-story building on a dare. And I also play the violin and, you know, sometimes set off fireworks indoors for fun. That person's from New Orleans. I don't have to like see an ID to tell you that this person is from New Orleans.
Yes, yes. My boy, Fred Baptiste, he tells his story. He said he had a homeboy, a cousin of somebody, who was trying to explain the difference between people in the projects in New Orleans and people in the projects in Baton Rouge. And please understand that Fred and his cousin are black people, so they can say some of these things before you get a little nervous. And he was like, in the projects in New Orleans, at least, you know, they read, you know, people reading literature, playing classical music in the projects in Baton Rouge, they are just ignorant. And I don't know if I can speak to the ignorance of the projects in Baton Rouge, but that is the kind of thing that you'll find out of nowhere in the projects in New Orleans. Like, there's the idea that somebody will go shoot two people, wash his hands, and then go read poetry somewhere. That's New Orleans.
Yeah, and I like, you need to understand Louisiana. If you talk about somebody, just to bring it back to like Ed Ogeron, where football falls into this, everybody gets on the same page when it comes to football.
Yes.
Like they'll get on, and the most dangerous place to be in a world without college football in New Orleans, right, and without college football in Louisiana, is at a New Orleans Saints game. How overpressured are the Saints going to be if they manage to get a product on the field this fall?
Yes, they need it.
How overdetermined is the outcome of every single game?
Well, last time they delivered, right? Like, last time they got to the NFC Championship game, they were under one of those circumstances. Oh, and we left out one Louisiana, which is like Louisiana my daddy's from, a little town called Oakdale, which is kind of geographically, it's at the vertex of the right angle on the northeast part.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, you know how it looks like an L? And so it's at that point in the center of the L. And so you get like your various like domestic Louisiana, right? Like, as I feel like that's not like Cajun white folks. That's just really just white folks, right? And then you got black people. But also, because Alexandria is not too far away with Fort Polk,
mm-hmm.
you get your Vietnamese, and there's a strong South Asian population. You want to talk about some accents, Jack?
And then, do you want to talk about the one thing that's going to get everybody in a lather is this. If the Saints don't pick up this football, and if the Saints drop it, and if they don't go to a championship game, or if they don't at least give it a decent run, how's that going to be? You say, like, okay, last time they delivered. Yeah? For their own welfare.
Yes.
If they weren't properly motivated to satisfy the demands of the Louisiana populace.
That's fair.
And now you take out LSU, because remember, LSU did real well, too. You know, like LSU came back real strong from that as well. What are they going to do without that? I wouldn't want to be on the Saints roster this fall.
No, and I'd also like to say the NFL, as much as I enjoyed them blowing that call that kept the Saints out of the Super Bowl, because whatever it takes, it was more fun that they got robbed than it would have been if they lost it fair and square. Don't play no games with these people this time.
No, sir. Like, I actually, like, of all the places where I hope football happens, you know, Louisiana is one of them, because, you know, it's one, it's a great party. Two, it's one of the places where they actually have the bandwidth to do double duty, to pick up the NFL and to pick up college. Like, they will do both. I think there's a lot of places where it's, I do this on the weekends, and then there's the day where I mow my lawn. And in Louisiana, it's, okay, and in Texas, too, I think there's a fair amount of this. Okay, on Saturday, I watch football. And then on Sunday, I also watch football.
Yes.
Right?
Yo, the state gives how many millions of dollars a year? Like, New Orleans is actually not big enough, and the state is not enough to support an NFL franchise financially. Mm-hmm. The Saints are basically a state university.
Yeah. You're like, well, how much money would be too much for the Saints? A million? They give much more than that. Way much more than that.
Like, it's tens of millions.
Yeah. Yeah, to keep them there. And it's because of all of the things that you say, okay, Louisiana, everything is underfunded. It is a state under considerable pressure economically and in terms of a crumbling infrastructure. The one thing that Louisiana will always support in terms of attention, time, dollars, and love is football. And on top of that, by the way, like it's one of those places, just like last note I have on Louisiana is this. They will roll straight from football, and they will, without pause, roll into basketball and then baseball at the same time. There is no like, oh, you know what? I think, you know, I'm just going to take a break from LSU, come back for football in the fall. No, son. What? Those Tigers need you. Those big burly boys who do nothing but hit home runs, which at one point early on in the history of the LSU baseball program were definitely not the product of PEDs. Nope. Like, they need you. And guess what? We need you in basketball, too. And they just show up. They just show up. Like, they keep coming. It is relentless. Like, if you just translated the fan fitness of the LSU fan to the physical plane, they'd all be ultra runners.
Right.
Because they just keep going.
But what's also interesting with Louisiana in that regard is that this isn't just about LSU. They're like that at Southern. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, they're like that at Louisiana Lafayette. Right? Yeah. Either they do it or they don't. And please understand about Louisiana, it's a lot that they don't. But if they do, they're going to do it to death.
100% commitment at all times. It's absolutely astonishing. Which I guess is, you know, like, again, back to the point. Why is Ed Ogeron, like, buddying up with Mike Pence? It's that desperate in terms of what he feels is a need, right? Both on a personal and on a cultural and political level for Louisiana to have football. Will Louisiana be okay without football? Yeah, they won't die. But at the same time, will it be a lot better if there's football? Yeah, yeah, because that's the thing that continues. That's the thing that endures. That's the thing that lets everybody know that there's at least some semblance of routine there, even if there's no fans in the stands.
How much of an uptick do you think there's been on DIY alcohol, given these economic times and given these economic times?
Ain't none of your business. That's the answer. It's in your cup. Don't ask where it came from.
Like, whoo!
That'd be my answer ready, right? Yeah. That's what I would anticipate if somebody would go, where did you get this? You got it from me, didn't you? Well, yeah, where did you get it? I think that's my business, isn't it?
Whole lot of alcohol being served out of 2 liter Sprite bottles.
Mm-hmm. I would bet, by the way, that's an especially powerful trend south of I-10.
I remember that first time I got a swig of that corn, boy. Never again. Like, I'm not in that much of a hurry.
Yeah, I would also bet this, by the way, that if you weren't drinking that, you might be getting beer from a third party or a fourth party source. You might be getting beer that somebody that fell off a flatbed somewhere.
Fair.
Right? Because when the supply chain breaks down, guess what? The beer keeps coming.
How?
You don't want to know.
Fair. Now, let's talk about our man Tommy Tuberville, shall we?
Oh, sure.
And so, now, for people who do not know or remember Tommy Tuberville, Tommy Tuberville was a reasonably successful head football coach in college. But I also want to read off to you the journey that Tommy Tuberville has had in his life. Do you know where he went to college?
Yes, I do. He was a mule rider.
I had no idea. He went to Southern Arkansas University. And by the way, he must have been a really mediocre football player if that's the only place he could get a ride.
He went there on a golf scholarship.
Oh, okay. Learn more things, right? So Tommy Tuberville did that. He graduated from Southern Arkansas University. He was an assistant coach before becoming the head coach at a place called Hermitage High School in Hermitage. I think that's how you say it. Hermitage, H-E-R-M-I-T-A-G-E.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is where he was from 1976 to 1979, after which he moved up to the big city to go to Jonesboro, Arkansas, to coach at Arkansas State, where he coached the following positions: defensive backs, linebackers, and nose guards.
Yeah, but not defensive ends, because apparently if you...
Right. What kind of separation of duties is that, all right? So after that, where do you go if you're Tommy Tuberville after you coach for 5 years at Arkansas State and then you take a year off? Where do you go for your next job to work for the next 8 years? And the answer, of course, is the University of Miami.
Can I give you this, though? Do you know what he did in that off year?
I do not.
He ran a catfish restaurant.
Oh, that's right, because he would tell recruits about running the catfish restaurant.
That is correct. So right. If you want to know, the career arc is even weirder than you think. He went from Jonesboro to catfish restaurant to the University of Miami,
where his first year was the year they wore the fatigues off the plane.
Mm-hmm. Where he was roommates with Ed Orgeron.
That's what I'm saying, because Ed Orgeron was there. But they had to fire Ed Orgeron, right? Because he was too wild for Miami?
Yeah, if you want to know what a wild boy Ed Orgeron was before he... And Ed Orgeron will talk about this. He got sober, cleaned up, doesn't drink. He was a recruiter and a wild boy for the University of Miami, so wild that he couldn't stay on at the University of Miami. So if you want to know what a wake-up call is in your life when the University of Miami in its heyday fires you as an assistant and says, you're too much, that's a moment. You need to listen. And he did.
It's also worth noting he has the discipline of Miami football, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all the stuff that we talk about is Miami football in heyday. But Tuberville was there from 86 to 93. Okay. Think about all the guys that ran through Miami at that point. That also means he was there for the Erickson era, which is the wildest era of college football of any team that's ever been reasonably successful, where the players were 100% in charge of everything. So those are the guys that Tommy Tuberville was hanging out with before he went to Texas A&M, which, interesting time to be there also. Then he coaches Ole Miss, where he helps to get people to stop waving the Confederate flag at games because, you know, the players don't like that, right?
Hard to recruit.
Yes.
And he is on the record of saying that.
In public, right? This isn't something he was doing quietly. He was out front on this.
Out front and saying, not the moral case for it, but if y'all wave that flag, it's hard for me to get talented black players here.
Yep.
Strictly a recruiting ploy.
And he eventually gave up and went to Auburn, where he had this run where it was very interesting. Bobby Petrino, who used to be his assistant, Actually, to be fair to Petrino, they tried to give his job to Petrino. And Petrino was like, psh, I'm listening. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Tuberville somehow survives, has an undefeated season the next year, and then runs his course. He had his typical Auburn experience where you have a really good year, like one every 4 years, and then they get mad at you, and then it's time for you to go. He leaves. He coaches Texas Tech. He coaches Cincinnati. But he was seen as a guy, again, he coached at Miami, right? He won the Republican nomination for Senate in Alabama, beat Jeff Sessions, and I just can't imagine how furious Jeff Sessions is about this. And Tuberville is all in on the Trump train, right? Like, what won him this is that he was on the Trump train, and Sessions, who had been the senator before and all this stuff, not on the Trump train. So now this is where Tommy Tuberville stands right now. And I saw a story in the Washington Post where they went back to talk to his old players. And even the Republicans are like, yo, I can't believe this.
Mm-hmm. As in, do not recognize this man.
Have no idea who's out here, right? Nobody knows what's going on here. And he's trying to win this. And he has decided that his ticket to winning this is going to be racism, basically. Just flat out racism. Because one thing he's not telling you is that he had anything to do with the Confederate flag coming down at Ole Miss.
Correct. The other thing, too, about Tuberville is a couple things. One, if we just let God do his work and gotten out of the way, we wouldn't be dealing with this. And by that, I mean, if we had let mega booster Bobby Lauder fire Tuberville on the sly after a covert interview with Bobby Petrino back in, what, 2004?
It was 03.
Yeah, if you just let mega booster Bobby Lauder do his work and hire Bobby Petrino at Auburn, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Nope, because what happened in 2004?
Yeah, 2004, they go undefeated.
Yes.
The year that Tommy Tuberville uses as the anchor for his entire resume, the single point of excellence, unquestionable excellence, when they go undefeated and miss out on a national title shot. Why? Because they scheduled the Citadel. That's why USC and Oklahoma end up meeting in the title game, right? Yep. Because they scheduled the Citadel. There was a big thing about SEC schedule weakness, and I think a completely valid argument about SEC schedule weakness, and that they occasionally padded their schedule with cupcake games like the Citadel. Auburn ends up missing out on that and plays Virginia Tech. I think they end up playing, like, this is also, by the way, peak Tuberville, to have an undefeated team that goes to their big game at the end of the year, and they have, like, a 16-13 snoozer.
Yes.
Like, I think it was 16-13 against Virginia Tech that year, which is how that was going to be, because that's just kind of the football Virginia Tech played. But anyways,
with three first-round picks on offense.
With Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown in the backfield.
And Jason Campbell as quarterback.
Yeah. By the way, another thing ruined by the Washington football franchise, Jason Campbell, right? On the long list of things ruined by the Washington football franchise. But if we just let that happen, if you just let Bobby Lauder work, okay, in college football, when you see the big man with money coming through, let him do their thing. Let him do the thing. Because you know what? You might have prevented this bizarro, evil Senate campaign that Tommy Tuberville's running in Alabama if you just let Bobby Lauder work. We wouldn't even be talking about this. He'd just be a happy memory, the defensive coordinator at Miss State or something right now. But no. We actually had to get that all out in public and act like it was a thing instead of what Bobby Lauder wanted was best for everybody. All credit where credit is due here. Two, with Tuberville. This is a complete 180 from the man who walked up to the desk at SEC Media Days 1 year without a single reporter hassling him. And then when asked later about how he was able to do that, said, ah, sweet anonymity. Loved it. He loved that the other coaches got mobbed and Tommy Tuberville could just walk up. His whole thing at Auburn was to just keep it low profile, keep the expectations as low as possible, and just be chill. And this is so deeply unchill. Like, his entire campaign is the opposite of that.
And now the unchill is coming back in the other direction, because the problem that he has is that he doesn't have a record as a politician, but he has a record as a coach. And also, I think this is something that's important to note. I think that people from outside of Alabama and outside the South believe that the state of Alabama is like 50% Alabama fans and 50% Auburn fans. That's not really how it works. The state is overwhelmingly Alabama fans, or I'd say mostly is probably a better way to put it. Mostly Alabama fans. Auburn fans are the minority, which is to say that there is also a whole lot of people in this state who are always ready to tell you everything that Tommy Tuberville has ever done wrong, because Tuberville was doing this while they were beating the pants off of Alabama every year. And apparently one of those people runs the Twitter account for the Alabama Democrats, because they have all the college football jokes right now, and this is going to be hilarious.
Oh, now you just get to drag every single skeleton out of the closet. You get to drag losing to Vandy out of this. You get to drag losing to UConn when he was at Cincinnati, which UConn, nobody should lose to UConn in football in the past 5 years. And yet, Tommy Tuberville somehow managed to do it. They'll drag out my favorite thing when he was at Texas Tech at a recruiting dinner, got the offer for the Cincinnati job, was at a steakhouse dinner hosting recruits, and left halfway through the meal. Never to return. Out of Lubbock. Just gone.
Yes.
By the way, Mrs. Tuberville never moved to Lubbock. She stayed at the beach house and I believe Gulf Shores and never moved to Lubbock.
He absolutely was like, I'm here until I can get out.
Mm-hmm. No. And was all about it. And then managed to slap an assistant upside the head on camera while he was there.
Oh, I forgot about that.
At Texas Tech. Yeah, you know who didn't forget about it and won't forget about it? The Alabama Democrats Twitter account. They're going to remember all this stuff. Yeah, he took upside the head. He took his hand upside the head to one of his assistants.
Dude, listen to this one from the Alabama Democrats. Like, I'm not campaigning here. I just find this to be hilarious. They're talking about, because Tuberville was notorious for like getting a lead and trying to sit on it. And Sessions tried to use that against him at some point about, you know, like Sessions at one point went on full offensive on the Jeff Sessions stuff, and then like full offensive on the football. Like it totally turned into Tommy Tuberville will squat on a lead. The Alabama Democrats, the technical term is Tupper Shell, trying to beat Mississippi State 3-2. Fine. like these are the things that they're talking about, and I can't stop laughing at everything that they're saying. Alabama Democrats, legit the story of his career, a finger in the wind and a foot out the door.
Yeah, the memory is long. They will also bring up stuff, I'm sure, that has nothing to do with his football career whatsoever, like that he is not to participate in any kind of financial management schemes due to a $1 million investment fiasco with a partner who is pictured, by the way, in the Blind Side with him in Auburn gear, in his role in the Blind Side. Yeah, that's the guy. They're going to remember it all. And it's all there is the thing. And this is something when you get to coaches, that there are coaches who manage to go through and be all about football. And then there are coaches who somehow manage to get their foot caught in other traps. And along the way, it's not like Tommy Tuberville stepped in every single bear trap that being a person of means can afford you in the Southeast in particular. But he stepped in enough of them that they're going to become an issue in the Senate campaign. That's why it's important. It's like impossible to keep the sports out of your politics here, because this man's all been about sports and yet has made mistakes that have extended off the field.
Yes. By the way, this, I think, is a fascinating insight into the state of Alabama that's a bit underrated, because I think people hear the idea of a college football coach running for Senate and winning, and you find out it's in a place like Alabama. It doesn't seem strange. But I want to point out two football coaches who have run for the Senate and lost in their states. Bud Wilkinson lost running for Senate in Oklahoma. Okay? Bud Wilkinson. Tom Osborne, you know he spent all that time in the House, but he tried to run for the Senate. Lost.
Yeah. By the way, if we were to go ahead and summarize, would you describe Tommy Tuberville as being on par with those guys professionally in terms of records, results, and reputation?
That's what I'm saying, right? He didn't even coach the right team in order to do this. He Mm-mm. did not even coach the right team. That tells you so much about Alabama.
I think it made sense from the start, because if I had high expectations of somebody as a football coach, right, I would have the same expectations of them as a politician. If I got a blank slate, if I have a guy who's just above 500 and I could describe in some ways as unremarkable, which if I asked you to, I would say, well, what's a Tommy Tuberville team? I'd say, they're the kind of team that's probably going to try to hold the ball for a quarter and not do much. What's a better description of a senator? What am I going to do? I'm going to be unremarkable, say nothing, and obstruct. Perfect. He's actually a better candidate than Bud Wilkinson or Tom Osborne, because they actually went out and tried to win things actively instead of just waiting for you to screw up. Perfect candidate, in my opinion.
We need to think more on another day of college football coaches that we wish had run for office at some point. Like, would you donate to the Johnny Majors campaign?
No, but I got one for you. Barry Switzer.
Yeah, there's no way he'd lose.
No.
Honestly, they already made a movie about that. It's called The Distinguished Gentleman. Eddie Murphy and like Eddie Murphy, Shirley Lee Ralph. Like, I feel like that's what it would have been like if Barry Switzer had run for Congress. The thing is, it's funny. I feel like if Barry Switzer had run in like 85, he would have run under a completely different platform than he would in 2020.
Yeah, no, it would have been completely different, but he would have won. Yes. I think if you said Barry Switzer is running as a hardcore socialist in Oklahoma, I'd still get even money on him.
Hold on, though. But I don't know if he could win in Oklahoma. I do know if he could win in Texas. And the reason I don't know if he could win in Oklahoma, but he could win in Texas, is Texas has a lot more black people.
That's probably true. And Barry's going to win that.
Yeah, yeah.
Barry's going to win that every time.
Yeah, yeah. He'd have to overcome some beef with some people, right? You know, yeah. But ultimately, Oklahoma didn't have enough black people to secure victory for Barry Switzer. But that is my man, Spencer Hall. Check him out. Where are we checking you out now?
You know what? We'll go Twitter, at EDSBS. That's where I'm at primarily right now, due to the flux in our industry at the moment, but it's all good. Also, if you check out the Sinful Seven, just Google Sinful Seven. That's our bizarro NCAA science fiction Western based on the early days of the NCAA and the establishment of amateurism. There's also a train robbery in it. So, learn some stuff about how we got the system in the first place and, read about a train robbery that I just made up off the top of my head as a metaphor for what happens in college athletics. Is this exactly the kind of project that you would expect of somebody in the in-between times? Absolutely. Is it the kind of thing you can get away with because it's the in-between times and you're the ones deciding what you want to do? Absolutely. Are you going to get, zombies, cannibalism, and some Old West shootouts? Yeah, go ahead.
Here for it. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.